Okay. Turn with me again. We're going to pick up where we left off last time. This is going to be study 92 in our word walk. And, you know, the word walk encompasses many things. And quite legally, and especially in Ezekiel, we find where it talks about walk, it usually go or went or something that Jehovah asked one to do. And it might be the cherubims, or it might be Ezekiel, or it might be other things. So the word itself is, you know, quite large when you get looking at it in that sense. And this is study 92, as I said. This is the 29th day of June, 2016, and we've been on this little trip for quite some time now. And we're in Ezekiel 10, and we covered verses 9, 1 through 9 last week, along with a little of chapter 9. But we're going to pick up with verse 10 again tonight, and it's still dealing with Ezekiel and the cherubim, which is in the temple at this particular juncture. You know, we usually think about the cherubim of God. You know, we it first showed up probably, I believe it was Genesis 3, where it guarded the way of the tree of life, the cherubim did. And here in Ezekiel, you know, Ezekiel saw, he was at the river Chebar, and he saw it, you know, coming down in front of him, and so he described it for us. And the description was, I think it was really phenomenal that he could describe something of this nature so vividly. But I don't think he knew it at that particular minute or that particular time exactly how the cherubim were going to fit in to what God had called him to do. And, you know, Jehovah had called him to be a witness and a prophet to those that were in exile, or those that had been carried off into Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar's first visit to Jerusalem and to that area of Mount Moriah there. And so, you know, you have Jeremiah who was prophesying in the land, and now you've got Ezekiel who is going to prophesy outside the land, but he also is being made a witness. And so he's been carried by the hair of the head and carried back into Jerusalem to see the things that Jehovah showed him that mankind didn't think God knew about what was going on in the temple area. And he said it had gotten so bad until he had to abandon his house. And this was one of the reasons why these people were being taken away and cast out. And Jeremiah tells us, you know, that it's going to be a period of about 70 years. Or 70 years. So, you know, here we are. And so, the guy dressed clothed in linen, that was one of the six, I think, that God had chosen to bear down upon Jerusalem and the temple area. It said he had an inkwell by his side, and he went out and marked the heads of people that were worthy to escape this judgment that was going to befall those people there, because they all had grossly sinned and were involved deeply in idolatry, very deeply in idolatry. And we've come now to see that what had happened there, and we're now looking at the fact that the cherubim are in the temple area of, that God has says he couldn't use anymore the way it is. And so we're going to start there and go from there. And let's just go back to 8 and read 8 and 9, and we'll start with our lesson. It said, "And there appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under their wings." So evidently, these, I call them God's beings, had four wings. They had two wings that they put up and touched one another as they moved, and this movement was like lightning, or the speed of light, if you can imagine that. And so this guy clothed in linen, was told to get fire from in the. There was an area within where the four cherubims were as a unit. I call it a firebox. I call it God's firebox, because it is God's fire, and it's not anything like what man can use or do, but it was God's fire. And so this guy was told to take this and broadcast it over Jerusalem and burn it. That was the deal there. But let's look at verse 9. It says, "And when I looked, behold the four wheels by the cherubim, one wheel by one cherub, and another wheel by another cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was the color of a beryl stone." And, you know, the beryl stone is also called a Tarshish stone. And it looks like, seems to be that of topaz. Or probably the beryl stone was a topaz stone. And then we get into, and look at verse 10, and it says, "And as for their appearance, the four had one likeness as if a wheel had been in the midst of a wheel." So, again, I think we've all seen some sort of a mock-up, or what some people think that it looked like. And certainly, you know, the wheel in a wheel is not, evidently, is not something new. We now have what we call a gyroscope, and it basically works in some sort of a situation the same way as what we're getting this view of here from Isaiah. And it says, "And as for the appearance, all had the same features. The four had one likeness." So they were, had things in common or alike. So, but the four worked as one, as a team, if you will. And it says in this, as if a wheel had been in the midst of a wheel. And the word wheel here is, in the Hebrew, is from another word that's called in the same way. It's a fan, but here it's ophan. And so the wheel had been played, the wheel had been placed with of the other ophan, or the other wheel, if you will. And it says in verse 11, and when they went, they went upon that, and they turned not as they went, but to the place whither the head looked, they followed it. They turned not as they went. Now we realize and we understand that all four of them had a head. But evidently there is one that is head of the head, if you will. I don't know how to explain it any different from that. But it says, when they went, and there's that word Yolak there, 32:12 in the Strong, and it means as God would send one. And there's a lot of different, versions of this particular aspect of the word. So when they moved or they traveled, they went upon their four sides, but they went upright. And it says they turned not as they went. So we realize and understand here that Jeremiah is telling us that their movements are straight line movements. And they don't have to turn, but so we've got here one head now that's leading the four beings, if you will, or God's creatures. If you know your creatures, I don't like to use that word creature, but. They're there for a job and a reason. So, one head is leading the four beings, and they followed it. They turned not as they went. Again, you get the strong sense that it's a straight line movement, and it is as the speed of light or as lightning when they go. But now, when they're in the open, now here, they're inside the temple area. And so, you know, this is something that was a little different. This was the reason that God was showing this to Ezekiel, because Ezekiel is going to be not also going to witness the same things that God witnessed in the temple and outside the temple. Okay? And then we get down to verse 12, and it says, and their whole body and their backs and their hands and their wings and their wheels were full of eyes round about, even the wheels that they four had. So, pretty descriptive if you go to a Google search or something on the internet and then see what's out there. Some people have done a good job, on those things. So it says the whole body and their backs and their hands, they all had the same features. And their wings and their wheels were full of eyes all over, around about, all the way full of eyes. Even the wheels, the ophan. And the difference between ophan and aphan is You know, one is for use on the earth, I think, and the other is for a heavenly travel, or a what we would call a space travel in that sense. He said, even the wheel that the four had. So even the wheels that were within the wheel, the Ophan that was within the Ophan, and also it said the spirit, the power of the spirit was in the wheel places. And it says in 13, as for the wheels, it was cried unto them in my hearing, O wheel. So let's break that down just a little bit. It's a very short verse. But the Ophan here for the wheels, the Ophan is for earth travel or earth use. Looking at here. So if you, you know, if you have a problem with that, it might be good to make your own study. And it said, and it was cried unto them. I don't know if it was the head being or the four in unison. I cannot tell you that because it doesn't tell me in the things that I have to study by. But it said, it was cried unto them in my hearing or within earshot of me. So he's the witness to that. He's seeing things and hearing things. And these things are going to be burning into his mind from now on. And it says, O wheel. And if you read the note there in 14, it says a cherub or the cherub, singular, identifying it with that of verse 7. So evidently the cherub of verse 7, where he stretched forth his hand and he got a handful of this fire of God and he gave it to the man clothed in linen. The man clothed in linen was told to get it, but he wasn't allowed to touch it first. And so the cherub reached in and got the fire out of what I consider the firebox with one hand, and he put it into the hands, plural, of the man dressed in linen. So evidently the size of the hand, it had the appearance, but evidently the size of the hand was different in that situation. So you see how the things that God uses are made to fit the situation. And that's very important that we also remember that. Well, what he heard when it's broken down, when it says, oh, wheel, it means to roll, roll. And so they're ready to go, you know, into that situation. In verse 14, it says, and everyone had four faces. This corresponds with chapter 1, verse 11. And sometimes there's exceptions, and here's an exception. Okay, the first face was the face of a cherub. And the second face was the face of a man. And the third face was that of a lion, was of a lion. And the fourth, the face of an eagle. So, here again, and I can't explain this, but the bullet was taken out of this one and the cherub was inserted in the face of those that were here. Now, if this is a little different unit from the one that Ezekiel saw at Chebar in chapter 1, I do not know. But I'm just bringing forth this out for your information that you can look at it and see what you think about it. But here, in the first phase was that of a cherub. The cherub replaces the bullock of the ox on the beings with the four faces. And the second face was the face of a man, and that is probably the top part of that face on the right side. And then also, there was a note that I read somewhere. It said, showing the failure of man. So we understand that Adam certainly failed in his situation with dominion, and that was that's a no-brainer. That's certainly very well known. The third face was the face of a lion on the right side also. And this is always a depiction of a sense of violence. Because lions, they rule with violence. And this was what was brought in to take away the children that God had chose to other parts of the world. It was done with a sense of violence. Okay? And it said in the fourth was the face of an eagle. It was on the left side also. And the sense there with the eagle is a sense of laceration, or to quickly slay, to cut and kill. And this is what an eagle certainly is known to do, for its resiliency and for its carrying on. And of course, it is an eagle, you think about an eagle having a lofty place of view, if you will, in that situation. So all of this can tell you quite a bit, even though it seems like that we're going around and kind of around the world to do it. But this is something that's unusual because the cherubims are here in the temple and the temple area. And it says in verse 15, and the cherubims were lifted up. This is the living creatures that I saw by the river of Chebar. So, whenever you see the word lifted up, it means to bear away the symbol of the divine presence. And the symbol of the divine presence of God is three things. It is either cloud, it is either smoke, or it is fire. Cloud, smoke, or fire. And here I think it is a cloud that is being used in the temple area. And it's said by the river of Chebar. This, he says, is the same as what he saw in chapter 1 and in verse 5. And again, they call it living creatures, and I use God's being, if you don't mind, because what God uses for His purposes, most often we can't fully understand. because he don't many times tell us. But here, he is telling Ezekiel enough that Ezekiel is going to get a good idea of why the cherubim's being involved here. Then we get to verse 16. And he said, and when the cherubims went mount up from the earth, the same wheel also turned not from beside them. Okay. So we get a little better descriptive point of view from God's beings here. He said, where they went. And again, that word is Yolak, because they are directed by God. They are God's vehicle that he uses for his purpose. That the wheels of the Ophans went by them or alongside or beside them. And when the cherubims, these same, lifted up their wings, you see, they would raise and touch. The four of them would make the contact. It was like a contact point. They would raise and touch each other's wings to mount up or to raise away. And that is 7311 in the Strong's room, like maybe what you're sitting in, a room. That is the way it's pronounced or said from the Hebrew. And it said that they would raise away from the earth. So they had the ability to either move in a straight line on the earth or move away from the earth in that same type of straight line. And it said the same wheels, or the Ophan, also turned not from beside them. So the wheels remained with these four beings. From beside them. So evidently they was, if you kind of get an idea of the look, it may have had a tilt situation on it whenever they moved off the earth. And, but, you know, dynamic thing there, I think it's a little goofy for us to think that, but nevertheless, there was some involvement of some moving somewhere there that wasn't like it was when they were standing still or moving on the earth. Okay. It said, for the spirit of the living creature was in them. So again, it tells us that the Ruach of God, of these beings, the four as a single unit, it was in the Ophan, or the wheels. If you will. Because it seemed in that sense. Then in verse 18, and we're going to have to go back a little bit because to give you an eye view of what's going on here. Let's look at 18, and it says, then the glory of the Lord departed from off of the threshold of the house of the temple, and he stood over the cherubims. So, we have to go back a little bit here. Up to verse 4. So it said, and the glory of the Lord departed. Okay. From off the threshold. So Why and when did they get on the threshold of the temple there? So let's go back to verse 4 for just a minute and refresh our memory. It said, then the glory of the Lord went up from the cherubim and stood over the threshold of the house. And the house was filled with the cloud. Okay, here you got the glory of God filling the house. And the court was full of the brightness of the Lord's glory. So, the court was full of the brightness of the Lord's glory. And this was the court that Ezekiel had been shown. And this was the court where the secret entrance of the 70 could go out there and do their worship of idolatry in this court. And they had the thing sealed off, or they thought they had it sealed off, and they thought that God couldn't see it. So I think in verse 4, this was where God was cleaning up the court there, while it was full of the brightness of the Lord's glory, because it was so bad there that when God brings his people home, it was something that he would not want them to see whenever they entered in to the temple of God to restore it back to its glory. Now, you can agree or disagree with that, but when the brightness of God's glory fills something, there's a reason for it being done, believe you me. And I think this was God cleaning up, and the cloud and the brightness move to verse 18, where it said, and the glory of the Lord departed, and it went from the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubim. So evidently what happened there, we're not told, but, you know, we can kind of understand from what has been told to us that when God got done with what he was doing there, then he moved his glory on. And this is what the work of the cherubim there is there for and was doing. And the brightness there was that of a rainbow. If you want to know what the glory of God is, I think we've all seen a rainbow in the sky from one time or the other. And it is awesome. And I'm 78 years old, and every time I see it, it kind of puts chills down my back, because the day where he has not spoken himself. But this is in that silence and that bow of things that man has tried to reproduce, but he can't truly do it. And it is the glory of God. If you don't believe it, go back to the last two or three verses of chapter 1, and it will tell you what it is.
That's the one of existence.
Ezekiel 1, yeah, the last two, three verses. And Ezekiel 1 will tell you about the boat. It's absolutely that of the rainbow. And, you know, people, whatever their thinking and their manner of life, because that too is a walk, if you don't. Parted from off the threshold of the house of the temple, and it stood over the cherubim. Okay. So we see that it went from place to place to place within the temple area, and now it is getting out of the temple. So it says there, and the cherubims are God's being lifted up, raised their wings to touch each one to the other. That's the way it works. And mounted up. Now, mounted up here, if you look at it in the Strong's, it's 7426, and it's Ramam. Ramam. And this is the only usage of this word in all of Scripture. Mounted up. And it means to rise or exalt. And this point is from off the earth. And Ezekiel says, in my sight, or Ezekiel witnessed it. They lifted up off of the earth, and Ezekiel witnessed this thing, you know. And it says, and when they went off, or went out, or outside of the temple, the wheels of the Ophan, to get ready for travel, it did it at that point. And he says, and everyone, or the whole as one unit, stood at the door outside of the east gate. So that gives us a pretty good indication, you know, as to it is out now outside of the temple, just outside. What is it, the east gate? You know, I can only think of the song, just outside the eastern gate, I will meet you in the morning. Well, they had left the house of the Lord. You know, kind of like they used to say when Elvis finishes concerts, Elvis has left the building. And the Lord has left the temple. But he's coming back. And he said, and the cherubims lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth in my sight. And when they went out, the wheels also went beside them. And everyone stood at the door of the east gate of the Lord's house. And the glory of the God of Israel was over them above. So, the bow or the rainbow of Elohim of Israel was over them above. And this is one of the few times that these events take place without Jehovah's direct orders being issued, or if they were, Ezekiel didn't hear it because he couldn't write about it if he didn't hear it. Okay? Verse 20, it also talks about it again. This is the living creature that I saw under the God of Israel by the river of Chebar, and I knew that they were the cherubim. So you see that this was all of the reason that Ezekiel saw it to begin with, to see the relationship between the cherubim and the temple area and what he was shown in that temple area. So he said, this is the living creature of the cherubims, or God's being, that I saw. And in chapter 1, it's what he's talking about here. Under or controlled by Elohim, the God of Israel. See, Jehovah's orders weren't issued here. Okay? Under the God of Israel by the river of Chebar. Again, that of chapter 1. He said, and I know that they were the cherubims. He's now saying to us and to those people and to those that he was going to go out and witness and prophesy to. Ezekiel says, I now understand why I had to witness all this. Isn't that something? That they were the cherubims, or God's beings, these living creatures. Then we get to 21. Turn the page with me if you have a CB. In 21 it says, everyone had four faces apiece, and everyone four wings, and the likeness of the hands, likeness of the hands of a man was under their wings. So it had the likeness. It might not have been the same size. We've kind of come to that understanding. So every one, or each ish there, or each cherubim, if you will, had four faces apiece. A head with four faces each. And we went over that more than one time. And every one had four wings. They had two wings for body cover and two wings for movement. That's not very hard to understand either after we've covered this much ground. And had the appearance or the likeness. They looked as the hands of a man or a human being. It was under their wings. It was beneath their body covers. And it's only seen when it needs to be seen in that sense, if it makes sense. And it said, and the likeness of 22, and the likeness of their faces was the same faces which I saw by the river of Chebar, their appearance and themselves. They went, everyone, straight forward. Now, to go back to 17 or 18, where it said one had the face of a cherub, singular. I don't know what the difference was at that point, but certainly God can change. He made these beings, evidently, created them in some fashion, so he could change their appearance if he desires to. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that one. But I'm only bringing it for your further study, you know, if you will, because it is something. It's really tough to get a handle on, but it's really interesting to me, having been involved in mechanical stuff all my life. It is phenomenal that, you know, that I can read this and kind of get in my small mind the view of what this man was looking at. Now, this was 530 years before Christ started his ministry. 530 years. So, you know, if something like that showed up today, the military would be out in full force ready to try to shoot it down or something. You know, you think back from the time of Christ, 530 years, man did a great job. I think he did a phenomenal job with what he is telling us here, what he is showing us here. And the likeness or the appearance of their four faces was the same likeness which I saw by the river of Chebar. He said, I, Ezekiel, witnessed this in chapter 1. And certainly he did. And even though it seems to be somewhat different, I can't explain that, but he said their appearance or their likeness and themselves, their movements, their aura, and their unison as a unit was uncanny in a sense. And it says their movement, they went. And that word went again is Yawak. That's our word. That's our word for walk. Movement. Manner of life. Whatever you want to call it. This, it is really an all-consuming word. They went every one, every ish together. Straight forward. And so that concludes the 10th chapter of Ezekiel. We're going to get, next time we're going to get involved with the 11th chapter, and it is a little different because it leaves off from the things that he saw in that sense. And from the givenness these descriptions of the cherubim to a little different course of this, and it gets lifted up again, and he is brought to another spot in the temple, and he gets to see other things, and he is going to start really getting involved in prophesying in chapter 12. And I thought it was needful that we go through these four or five chapters here because, you know, when you start in a book, and you have groundwork laid, then if you don't follow the groundwork out, then it's really not a great help to you to understand what's going on. But you see, Ezekiel was given a scroll, and he ate it. And the words appeared on both sides of the scroll, which scroll usually is just written on one side. That this was God's word, and he was told to eat it, something that wasn't really a digestible thing, but he ate it, and so he had God's word in his belly, and he was hearing the words of Jehovah in his ears. And so the Holy Spirit wasn't indwelling Ezekiel here. And, but, you know, he got that, and then he got the sound part of it came direct. And many of these things, you know, he said it was done within my earshot. I heard it. And so that makes him not only a prophet, but also a witness. So when he gets before these people, and he starts telling them things, then he has a great tool to work with in the sense of both knowing from within and seeing from where he has been and seeing the things that caused those people to be carried away into captivity. But then again, they are, some of those that are in captivity, or at least their children, that are going to be able to come back. Because he is going to bring them back. But Jerusalem and the temple area had to lay in ruin, and it had to lay desolate for this period of time because they owed God these days because they didn't hold the Sabbaths or the holy days like they were told to hold them. And so God is going to extract that from them before they get come back. So you see what Jeremiah said in the book of Jeremiah, and he was in the land prophesying to them as these things were taking place. He told them it was going to. They wanted to kill it. Couldn't. And then here is Ezekiel. He's going to prophesy to these folks that are in exile. They may not have opportunity to come back, but their children certainly will. So keep that in mind as we go along. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar is going to come back to Jerusalem twice more. This, you know, the temple wasn't destroyed when he took these group out the first time. So he's coming back again. And he's going to get more of them and carry them away. So that kind of gives you a picture of how God is dealing with them in that sense of them going away. You know, God quit saying anything to his people for 350 years before Christ came to the earth. And for that short 3-year period of time that he taught, and then they crucified him, and he was raised up and ascended back up into glory since. And you know, God put up with a lot of stuff from the children of Israel. We live in the age of grace, and we call it grace. But he's still putting up with a lot of stuff from us. This day and age, and he's silent. He's not saying anything about it. But I think that we all need to get down on our knees when we see the rainbow in the sky, because that shows us that even though God is silent, he is still around and he is still in charge. And if you don't get anything else from these lessons that we've had recently, and it's been tough. But we need to remember that God's still in control, whether we hear him or whether he don't. But we know for a fact that he answers prayer.